When I was a young priest, I had the distinction of having not just one pastor, but two. My pastors were Father Dick Aiken and Father Joe Jucknowles. It was a somewhat unusual situation, but it was related to the fact that I was assigned to serve simultaneously in two parishes, the congregations of St. Nicholas and Holy Redeemer in Milwaukee. Now, some might question if this is the best of arrangements. After all, in most cases, it's hard enough having one boss. But I actually was very pleased to serve with Father Dick and Father Joe. Each of them had different ministerial gifts, and they shared them with me. And both of them were very good and holy men, and they blessed me with a love for the priesthood and, I hope, a pastor's heart. Yet this did not mean that my assignment didn't have its moments. You see, both Father Dick and Father Joe enjoyed the opportunities they had to give me a hard time. They found delight on those occasions when they could poke fun at me. For example, Father Dick sometimes liked to say to me what one of his former pastors used to say to him. You see, sometimes when I would give a homily or I'd complete a project, I would ask Father Dick for his assessment, how he thought I did. And then Father Dick would smile at me and he'd answer, "Well, Jeff, you aren't the worst." And then there was Father Joe. Many times I would be having a discussion with him and I would be trying to make a theological point. And then he would just shake his head and he'd laugh at me and he'd say, "What do you know, Jeff? You're not even old enough to have faith yet." You see, it was Father Joe's contention that true faith required maturity. He believed that it emerges amidst the crucible of facing the trials and tribulations and struggles of life. And he used to tell me that you had to at least live through your 30s to acquire that real kind of faith. And I especially make mention today of Father Joe's observation about faith being forged in the fiery furnace of struggles of life, because I do think there's a connection with the words of Jesus to the apostles Peter, James, and John at the end of the gospel that we just heard. As you recall, Jesus had just led these apostles up a high mountain to experience a most awesome revelation. They had seen Jesus transfigured with his face shining like the sun and his clothes becoming as white as light. Not only that, but the epic figures of Moses and Elijah appear in conversation with him. And if that wasn't enough, a bright cloud overshadows them all with the very voice of God the Father proclaiming, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." Clearly, this experience must have been a momentous revelation to Peter, James, and John regarding the true identity of Jesus. The one who had called them to follow him was clearly not just a wise rabbi or a wonder worker, but the very Holy One of God. And the mention of their fearful reaction in the gospel is not so much an indication of being scared as showing the proper reverence and obeisance known as the fear of the Lord. And yet, despite being recipients of this sacred revelation, Jesus warns the apostles not to tell anyone about the vision. One would think that it would be just the opposite, that Jesus would want them to spread the good news and far and as wide as possible. But I think the key to understanding the reluctance of Jesus to such a widespread dissemination of this vision has to do with the fact that he felt they first needed to wait until they had gone through the experience of his dying and rising. In its own way, I think that Father Joe was trying to make the same point with me as Jesus was trying to make with Peter, James, and John. Both were trying to convey the crucial role that the suffering of life plays in the birth of faith. That faith is more than belief born from the perception of the grandeur and glory of God. Rather, faith truly becomes faith when it arises from the pit of desperation, hope fighting its way through hopelessness, trust and commitment flailing through the darkness, and only then breaking through the struggle to glimpse the flicker of glory. And in the end, the glory shining that much brighter because it had overcome the darkness. Yes, it would be much more pleasant if our lives could be lived on the top of the Mount of Transfiguration, that our experience of the grandeur and glory of God could instill in us the faith that leads us to salvation. Yet, as it would seem, we must climb a different mountain, one called Golgotha or Calvary. And ultimately, we must accept that real faith, true faith, is born in the labor pains of struggle, trial, and tribulation. And only then does it burst victorious into life, like a beloved child with whom our God and Father is well pleased.